Niyachet,
withdraw.
Vishayebhya,
from sense engagements.
Akshan,
the senses.
Manasa,
by dint of the mind.
Buddhi,
intelligence.
Sarati,
driver.
Mana,
the mind.
Karamabhi,
by the fruitive work.
Akshiptam,
being absorbed in.
Subha arte,
for the sake of the Lord.
Dharayet,
hold up.
Dhiya,
in full consciousness. Translation. Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence the senses will be controlled. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. The mind too absorbed in. Purport. The first process of spiritualizing the mind by mechanical chanting of the pranava, omkara, and by control of the breathing system is technically called the mystic or yogic process of pranayama, or fully controlling the breathing air. The ultimate state of this pranayama system is to be fixed in trance, technically called samadhi. But experience has proven that even the samadhi stage also fails to control the materially absorbed mind. For example, the great mystic Vishvamitra Muni, even in the stage of samadhi, became a victim of the senses and cohabitated with Menaka. History has already recorded this. The mind, although ceasing to think of sensual activities at present, remembers past sensual activities from the subconscious status, and thus disturbs one from 100% engagement in self-realization. Therefore, Sukadev Goswami recommends the next step of assured policy, namely to fix one's mind in the service of the Personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, also recommends this direct process in the Bhagavad Gita 6:47. Thus, the mind being spiritually cleansed, one should at once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord by the different devotional activities of hearing, chanting, etc. If performed under proper guidance, that is the surest path of progress, even for the disturbed mind. So this is an important principle here, is that we tend to work on the all or nothing, and because of this, we don't get either. Here it is a matter of changing from one to the other. The example is given of the inchworm. The foot, the back foot is in place, and the front foot is becoming situated in the new place. And when that's firm, then the back foot is picked up. That's the process. Not that we give up the back foot and the front foot's not in place. But this takes maturity. Right? That's why it's mentioned, previous purports are mentioning that the neophyte, therefore, is engaged in the process, this impersonal realization, or so much absorption in the varnashram system, all these different aspects, because they cannot differentiate between the spiritual and material greatly. It means it's either spiritual or it's material. And they're not able to see that an activity can be transformed from one to the other. Right? Does that make sense? So, the principle that we're speaking about is that what material activities we are performing at present, those may be continued, but the focus is on spiritualizing the activities and spiritualizing the mind. That's why it says here, the mind too, absorbed in material activities, can be engaged in the service of the Lord. Right? We'll take it that it's Maya or Krishna, which is true. But there's the junction between when we're trying to get from the one to the other. So that takes maturity. If there's no maturity, then it's very clear. You have your duties, here's your process, here are the mechanics, all the externals, you go for it. And if you're advanced, you know, very advanced, then you just see Krishna and everything, whatever is done is Krishna. The material energy is Krishna's energy, so it's not material, it's spiritual. We call it material. That's our perception. Because we all see like that, therefore it's referred like that. Just like when you talk to a child, you say, you know, where is your father? Or, you know, your father's coming or daddy's coming or like that. You don't say, oh, such and such Prabhu. That's our relationship. But the kid's relationship is father. So when you talk to the child, you talk in their relationship. That's culture. Right? So that's the principle. Is therefore, the sages and the Lord call this the material world because that's how we see it. So talking to the neophytes, talking to the children, therefore they say like that. Because that's the standard. The sages, they're speaking, they're a disciple, they're children. Right? And therefore they address them and deal with them nicely and sweetly and as you would with children. At least in the Vedic tradition. So, then the concept is that this material consciousness, I mean the mind, let's take the mind here, is engaged in activity. But we try to transform that activity over to Krishna. It may be doing the material activity, but we try to connect that to Krishna. This is what we're trying to do. Right? But to understand it like this takes maturity. Right? One may say, oh no, it's just Krishna. But if it's just Krishna, let's see a raise of hands here who everything they do is just Krishna. There's nothing material about anything they do. Anyone raise their hand? Okay, if no one raises their hand, then I stand on my point. Is that we will say, this is Maya, and I'll only do Krishna. And then how long will we do that for? Until we're back in Maya. Think about it. The reason we keep doing this bhog-tyag, pure devotee, you know, complete materialist, is because of the immaturity of not understanding this very point, which is the opening chapter on spiritual life. The Bhagavatam's opening with this. Your mind's material, the activities you do are material. Therefore, do those, but now start to connect them to Krishna. So simultaneously, you're engaged in material and spiritual at the same time. And then gradually, the material will go, because material is simply the way we look at it. Does that make sense? It means what we're dealing with is material energy, is Krishna's energy, so it can't be material. It's Krishna's energy, it's spiritual. But it's inferior spiritual. And we're attributing to it superior spiritual. When we come to the material world, we're affected by two illusions. Brahma. That's not Brahma. That's the H is after the B instead of after the A. So that's Brahma. So Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. Vaikuntha Brahma is a material world's eternal. And Ananda Brahma is its a place of happiness. Right? Therefore, the famous shloka, Dukkhalaya Ashashvatam. Dukkhalaya, it's a place of misery. And Ashashvatam, it's temporary. Because these are the two illusions we have. Right? And those two connect back to I'm the controller and the enjoyer. I'm the controller, it's eternal. And, because I'm always in control. And I am the enjoyer, it's a place of happiness. Right? So these cardinal, you know, misconceptions of consciousness come to this platform. So that's why it's inferior. Because it is temporarily manifest, and there is nothing in it of happiness. But it's Krishna's energy. Seeing Krishna, Krishna's happy. So seeing him, then we're happy. Right? Material energy is connected. So the point is that we have to very maturely look at where I am this moment. Right? We'll tend to look at where I want to be and make the endeavor to act like that, which is good. That is commendable. But we also have to simultaneously look at where we are this moment and make a plan to connect the two. Right? Like here, the previous purport, the Prabhupada's pointing out, making the point that at some point here, Sukadeva Goswami is saying, once you get out of family life. So, because we should get out of family life doesn't mean that, you know, yesterday I got out of it. It means that, okay, when we're 50, then as soon after that, that's where we should be winding out of it. And the boy knows that before he gets married. So there's a plan. So it's not that, well, since I'm going to leave it anyway, it's just like, oh, well, everyone's going to get married, so we don't bother with brahmachari life. You know, there's no need of training. You know, it's not being honest, right? You know, we're just, playing a game, you know, like that. But you're going to have to leave the hasta ashram, so, you know, why not give it up now? You know, and you got to leave the body, so, hey, why wait, you know? You know, Howrah Bridge is there. I mean, so many options are there. You know, the national highway is here. You know, it's like that. You know. So it's, you know what I'm saying? So these are all incantations of the foolish, of the immature. The mature, they understand that there is, I am where I am today, and there's someplace I have to go. This makes a difference between someone who knows how to move the material energy, a manager, and someone who's not. Right? You take a big, successful man in the world. And why is he successful? Because he knows where he is and he knows where he wants to go and he has a plan to make the two match. And who are the ones that aren't successful? The ones that don't have those two. They have what they want, but not how they're going to get there. Right? So the idea is then the mind can function in both of them simultaneously. But the point where maturity, why I keep stressing the point of maturity, is where you're at now is not okay. Right? That we're in the material world, that's wrong. That we're embodied, that's wrong. That we're materially conditioned, that's wrong. That we're in mundane consciousness, that's wrong. That we have all kinds of mundane plans how we're going to be happy in this world, that's wrong. And becoming a pure unalloyed devotee of Krishna, that is right. Right? So basically that's right, everything else wrong. But wherever we are in that wrong, that's where we have to start from. Right? I mean, think about it. What is the typical, one of the typical manifestations of the male ego? Right? The guy's sick. Right? Has a cough or this or that. And then the ladies go, oh, you're sick. No, I'm fine, I'm this, no, I'm cool, I'm okay. Just a little cough, no, it's okay. Right? They have to do a whole thing, prove they're not sick. They're sick, but they have to, for their own ego, prove they're not sick. And somehow or another, it's very masculine. Why, I don't know, but it's popular. But, so the same principle as the living entities in the material world, we have the Purusha Bhav, we're male. Right? That's it, we're male. So that's the whole point. We don't want to acknowledge I'm sick. There's wrong. My consciousness is not good. My situation is not great. We can't acknowledge that. Right? We hoist the flag. Religious flag is up. And that's it. Somebody says something, hey. But, so that's the point, is that where we're at, we acknowledge. But in acknowledging that, it is not like this modern psychological nonsense. I would say demoniac, and I don't care that devotees practice it and preach it. It's demoniac. And I'll say it boldly. Because they're suggesting, no, recommending, in fact insisting that what you're at now, you should cultivate that and that's the real you. And the reason that you're all bent out of shape is because you're not engaging your senses and absorbed, right? All the karmis are absorbing it, they're going crazy, right? Shastra says that if you increase lust, it turns into insanity. So all the people in the insane asylum are people whose lust is great. Therefore, Freud came to the conclusion that everybody's doing everything based on sex, right? So now if you want to put your hands in the life of such crazy people, be my guest. But we're saying it boldly, that these monitored psychological things are demoniac. Like that. And I don't care who's doing it and who's making money off of it, it's wrong. Because it is trying to reinforce your material consciousness, your material position. So that's what I mean. It's all or nothing. Either I'm the pure devotee, I have nothing to do with it. I'm a married person with families, Maya, Bonnie's Maya, this is Maya, that's Maya, everything's Maya. I don't deal with it, I gotta have it, but everything's Maya. Or, you know, oh, all this, you know, being fanatic and that and all that, hey, been there, done that, you know, I did the 16 round 4 reg thing, you know, I was the GBC, I was the temple president, I was the regional secretary, I was this, that. Like that, you know, been there, done that. Now I'm down to real life and, you know, relationship with the family and the real meaningful things of life. And you can hear this crap all over the place. You know, go to any old community, and you've got plenty of it around. So this is the problem. This is why we don't get anywhere. We're too American. American is supposed to be used that I'm Krishna conscious, the world better become Krishna conscious. That's the advantage of being American. Everything else culturally, nonsense. Be convinced of that. The only advantage to this American culture is whatever you're doing, the rest of the world better be doing it or they're out of it. And I have been self-appointed to see that the rest of the world does what I do. So that's the advantage of the American mentality. Prabhupada very cleverly took it. And basically, if you look, every yatra in the world has been started by an American, you know, or an English person that's been influenced by an American. Like that. So that's the advantage. Right? They got to do something big, this and that. Great. So that's fabulous. Prabhupada engaged that. It's there. Use it. But one should understand is this is the point of the maturity. Just because this is where we're at doesn't mean it's great, it's right. And just because it's wrong doesn't mean I don't address it. This takes maturity. It doesn't mean that years makes maturity. This is spiritual maturity. This is personal maturity. I can personally acknowledge who I am. Spiritually and my conditioned nature. And I'm going to make the two connect. That's maturity. Otherwise, talk is very cheap. Right? So, this is the point. This is the opening point. If we can catch this, life will be so much easier. It's understood. Okay. Most people have to get married. They need facility. They need money. They need this. That's okay. No problem. And from that, you're going to gain so many needed emotional, sensual, intellectual interactions. Great. But it still is conditioned. Engage in those things, but at the same time, simultaneously be developing the spiritual. And in this way, transfer. Right? Otherwise, then we fall prey to Vishwamitra's program. Sits down, great personality, he's in samadhi, but he's not in samadhi on the personality of Godhead. Therefore, when Menaka comes along, then he remembers past, now he's not interested, but past activities, right? He was a king, right? Kings have wives, many of them, and maidservants, right? And you understand? So things are happening. And Menaka is one of the big five, right? Like that. In fact, I think after Urvasi, I think she is the number one of the five. Like that. So here you have a king, and here you have Menaka. And he's sitting alone doing his meditation, and she's dancing and saying, I'm yours, I'm surrendered. Right? Nowadays, it's kind of like, beat it. You know, but here she's saying, hey, here I am. So then he has a problem. Right? So the point being that is, if we don't have Krishna, then this is the position we're going to fall into in our so-called pure devotedness. You know what I'm saying? Because we're in between. We're not connected to Maya, but we're not fully connected to Krishna. So we have to deal with both of them clearly. That dealing with Krishna means Krishna himself. He's a person. The senses are engaged in his service. The mind being pulled out of material energy, that's great. But unless it's put into spiritual energy, then it's going to go back to material energy. Mind is mode of goodness that is based on air. Air moves. So when there's movement, the mind is peaceful. Right? This is from Ayurveda. The Vata constitution feels peaceful when they move. Therefore, you find some devotees, unless they're marching back and forth when they chant, then they don't feel peaceful. And others, this is nonsense, why are you walking? No, that's just the way that you move, you feel peaceful. Air, when it moves, it's peaceful because it's doing its air thing. Right? If it sits in one place, it's not, you know, he's known as Vayu, wind, not Vayu, air. He's not known as the air god, right? He's known as the wind god. So wind means air that's moving, right? And air is purified by moving. Therefore, it likes to move. So this is all connected. These are all aspects of the mode of goodness. So the mind is born from goodness. So the mind, when it's active, is peaceful. Right? It's only because one can't tell the difference between spiritual and material, therefore then it's meant, okay, here's material, spiritual means not that. Right? Neti. It's not this. Therefore they pull it out of that and make it peaceful. That's the first step. That's good. But more realistic is, Krishna's a person. Here's someone that your mind can actually be absorbed in. You're looking for something beautiful. You're looking for power, influence, you know, knowledge, wealth, position. It's all with him. He's got it. So when the mind can come across to that, then it becomes actually satisfied. Right? So that's what we're trying to get to. The mind always absorbed in the person of Krishna, and that we're doing these things for him as a person. Right? Okay, we cook for Krishna. Yeah, we're cooking for Krishna. But Krishna's a person. You know, we're cooking for Krishna because he likes to reciprocate by honoring the food of his devotees. Right? He accepts that. Here's a way which you can show it. Right? How many times you've been dealing with the person and they're doing the activity, but you go, hello? Right? Someone's talking on the phone, watching television at the same time. Yeah, yeah. Huh? Huh? Yeah? You can tell. You can't see the tell. You know, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? Right? Because they're not there. So that's the whole point. Is what Krishna's interested is not is the mind being there and the activity. In other words, the mind is connected to him, but it won't be static. We're not yogis where we just meditate, because yogis fall down. Right? We are into activity. But the point is the mind is there. So in the beginning, we do the activity with the idea the mind will get there. Right? The mind's not there now. We do the activity as the medium for the mind to get there. So that's there. At the same time as we realize that my mind likes to do this and that and so many things. It's not good, but I address it. Right? Okay, married person, I like family. Why is you married? Because you like women or men. Right? You don't marry them because you don't like them. Right? If you want to be a sadist, you don't have to do that, you know. You can get a whip and walk around and whip yourself. Or, you know, there's so many things you can do instead, you know. At least you know what you're going to get. You know. So, does that make sense? But it's that one likes the interaction, one feels it's of value. The person smiled, your whole day is worthwhile. They didn't smile, your whole day is not worthwhile. Right? So if we recognize, yes, this is important to me, then we will actually make the endeavor on that side to make that proper. Right? Because if it does mean something that they smile, why will they smile? Right? Because if they just smile, you know, nobody, that's not going to be what you want. Your smile has to be with the feeling. The smile is the medium for the feeling. Why will they feel? Unless you've done something for them, nobody smiles. Right? The detached person, the one attached to Krishna, then Krishna's, so he's seeing Krishna everywhere. Everybody's connected to Krishna, therefore he's smiling. Right? But others, is you have to do something. You know, you didn't bring home something, you didn't cook something, you didn't clean something, you didn't appreciate something. They don't smile. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You want it, pay for it. Don't, what's the thing? Justify? There's another word. Where you say it's okay, it's wrong, but you find a way to say it's right?
Rationalize,
yeah. You don't rationalize that it's fine. No. It's what you need. So it's not a matter of rationalization to do it. That's the thing, is I'm so embarrassed, you know, by our particular approach, I'm so embarrassed to actually acknowledge that I have emotional needs in dealing with the family. Right? So I'll rationalize that, oh, it's not Maya, it's this and that, and the others are fanatics. No. It's Maya, but you're attached to Maya, and this is where you're at today, so deal with it. Right? Because if you just leave it, then what are you going to replace it with? The mind has to be active. So it's active in these things, but it should be also, that's why it says, the use of the word to, means the T with the double O, means also. So here, the mind also absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead. So it's the one is there and the other. That's why the Vedic culture is there, because the Vedic culture, the principles that the material and spiritual are the same. Right? Mother Yashoda, how she deals with her with Krishna, is the same way that a very traditional, really well-situated Indian ma deals with her kids. There's no difference. Difference is one's God and the other one they say they're God, you know. But you know, so the one is Krishna conscious and the one's Maya. But if you focus on the other, then it connects. The culture, the philosophy, everything matches. It works very well. That's why the Western is weak, because it doesn't necessarily have those aspects. You know what I'm saying? It means underlying, of course. It means you strip away the pleasantness and niceness of the Vedic culture and the real reason that people are doing anything. That's the Western culture. But that doesn't mean it's honest. Because if we're really honest, then why would you be doing it at all? And if you are engaged, what is the other person getting out of it? Okay, you want to be married. You want this. Why? What are you doing for the other person? They should be married to you. You have kids. Why did you have them? What are you doing for them that is worth their while? Right? You're devotees. They're born in your family. What are you doing for them? Are you taking them back to Godhead? If not, why did they take birth in a devotee family? They could have taken birth in a karmi family. Does that make sense? But they're in a devotee for that reason. And they're born again because there's material attachment. Therefore, then they also expect some reciprocation, interaction, some pleasantries, you know, some commitment, all these things. You understand? So the whole thing is all around. It's not personal. We're dealing with persons on the material level. We're dealing with Krishna, who's a person on the spiritual level. So when these two are acknowledged, then we can deal with both of them properly. Does that make sense? Then we can go from the one into the other. But instead, we don't acknowledge the material and we're not really acknowledging the spiritual. So then we get stuck in between. Then we have the Vishwamitra program. Right? Absorb so much and, well, how did he go away? So advanced. So. Because until one's situated, the material energy pulls one back to what you knew before. Right? But we look at it 100% or nothing. He's a write-off neophyte or he's a super advanced. There's nothing in between. In our society, we don't have mudyamas. Right? We have neophytes, gross, disgusting neophytes, and fabulously advanced pure devotees. There's nothing in between. And the amazing thing is according to the American Padati, you know, is you can go from one to the other in, you know, from one to the other, you know, in 0.3 seconds. You know, you can be the greatest thing, the most important thing in my life, do something I don't like, and hey, you're a completely written off. So these are the, just pointing out these as weaknesses is something to contemplate, that we become aware of who we are, right? So that's being given right here in the first chapter of Sukadeva Goswami Singh. So we don't have to go to some outside psychologist to get that. Who are we? It's right here, who we are. Right? And if we can look at that, Then we see, I need this. Okay, that's not great. I need 237 saris, otherwise I start freaking out. You know? So, okay, you start with the 237, but, you know, is somehow or another connected to Krishna, and ultimately you're going to need that, you know? I mean, because later on, you know, when you're 80 years old, you're going to be able to maintain that many. Okay, so then there's a plan how to get it less. We need so much money, facility, but it's all got to be, this had to be a plan. This makes some sense? I don't know if it got across. But basically, trying to say is that the main point is the mind has to be engaged in activity. Active Krishna consciousness, that's the point. Inactive spiritual, that's for the impersonalists, the neophytes in transcendence. So here when we're using neophytes, we're meaning in transcendence, not in devotional service. Right? So that's for the neophytes in transcendence, is inactive mind, right? Because they've been active materially, so then you put them in the corner for a while till they become peaceful. As soon as they're peaceful, you have to engage them in positive, otherwise they'll make trouble again. Right? So the mind has to be actively engaged in active Krishna consciousness. That's the point that's being made. Otherwise, it is necessary that through the mind, the center of sensual activity, such transcendental realization be set into motion. Right? Otherwise, you say be performed. No, set into motion. There's activity. It must move. Right? So that's the point. But to do this realistically, because you're having the thing is the mind is engaged in both, we have to acknowledge both. And understand that the spiritual absorption of the mind and engagement, that's correct, and the material is not correct. But of the material that's not correct, because it's not correct, that doesn't mean I ignore it. It means I use it like you take out one thorn with another thorn. Right? By engaging it, recognizing it, engaging with it with knowledge, understanding, then it removes it. Right? Think about it. You have something, it's great, it's nice, and then somebody, let's say you're eating something, right? Oh, this is fabulous, this is great, you know? And then somebody starts to tell you what the ingredients are, right? It may start to lose something, right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, ignorance is bliss. So the tendency why we don't like to use this process, it means all those blissful things that we're ignorant about, I have to actually acknowledge and think about and place. And because of that, it may lose that nice, wonderful, sweet, sentimental ignorance. Right? Therefore is the platform of duties. You perform your duties, and based on that, that's where your emotional support will come from. Right? Just think about it. How important do you feel in a relationship is commitment? Right? How many here think commitment is an important element of relationship? Okay. Means the more someone's committed, the more you feel you can yourself trust and surrender. No? Okay. Now, does that come from sentiment? Does that come from just because they like you? Or does that come from because they have duties? Right? Because just like this, today you wake up, you're in a great mood. Everyone likes you. They talk to you. Everybody's happy. Tomorrow you wake up, you're not in a great mood. Everybody's, you know, walking around the block to avoid you. Right? So now, why will they continue doing nicely unless there's duty? Duty takes you through even unfavorable situations. Right? And of course, unfortunately, if this is a very bad word in the American polity, you know, duty. Duty means those things that you do because you're supposed to, but you really hate to do them. That's the American definition of prescribed duties. Right? Like that. But unfortunately, that's not everybody. British have a different idea, right? That's everything's based on that, at least in the aristocracy. Like that. So then, The sense of duty is because the duty is the commitment. Otherwise, just because of the mood doesn't mean they're committed. You smile, they smile. You don't smile, they don't smile. Where's the commitment? Commitment is you smile, you don't smile, they're there for you. Right? So that's what we're looking for. Those are in prescribed duty. That makes the thing. Therefore, then you can look at it from the point of intellectually analyzing it. So it may take all the illusory, you know, how do you call it? Kind of attraction to it away. You know what I'm saying? But it's replaced by something higher that's stable of that of prescribed duties. Does this make sense? It means this is a science. We're giving you the mechanics of it here. You deal with your relationship, family, you actually analyze what I want. Okay, it's here. Then it becomes too self-centered. Then, okay, I have to... Okay, so I want these things. I expect the wife to do this, the kids to do this. The wife is saying, I expect the husband to do this, kids to do this. Kids are thinking, you know, my parents should do this. But why? What are you doing to reciprocate that? You don't reciprocate, it's not a relationship. Right? It's not. Relationship means both ways. So what are you doing that you deserve it? What are you doing when you walk in the door that the wife goes, you know, Harry Ballin is happy? Rather than in the kitchen. Did you bring the cauliflowers? Right? What did you do that you get the one and not the other? Right? So it means something is lacking. You're not doing something. Or the other side is also unaware. So therefore, you know, they're shouting from the next room while you're getting out of the car in the, you know, in the front driveway. And then the wife hears the car door close and the car drive off. And she thinks, oh, he's going to get the cauliflower. She doesn't know that he's driving to the next city to join the next temple over there and take Vanaprast. Like that. So, is this understood? So, first is what I want out of it. Okay. But then it becomes a little mercenary. Next is what I'm willing to give. Then it takes it to the next level. Then it's a matter of, okay, but if I look at it like this, it takes all the fun out of it. Therefore, it's the prescribed duties. This is what I should do for the other person. They're doing this for me. What am I doing? You know, so what I'm willing to do, but you have to be able to appreciate what they're doing for you. Does that make sense? Yes.
Duty means spiritual attachment or affection.
That is what is towards Krishna and the devotees. Right? That's there. But the material duties then will have material attachment and affection. But if it's understood in its proper connection to the process of devotional service, then one can start to break it down and one can transfer it that the family are devotees and that's why you're attached. We can say that's what it is, but then you can watch the activities. Yes?
Yeah. In other religions, they often talk about belief and faith.
Uh-huh.
If you're talking like, you know, you start out with 227 hours, then you might go down to 230 and 23.
Yeah.
Is there ever recommended that you just throw them all in the trash can and forget about it and go and just make that leap of faith, you know, or is it... I can think of some devotees in our sampradaya who made that kind of thing for faith, like Bhikkhu Bhumbo.
Is that recommended? Could you hear? No, he's saying about other, he's mentioning that other religions talk about this leap of faith where you just actually take it and go for it. And, you know, so he's giving an example of, okay, we have 237 saris, we cut it down to 233, 232, you know, we got a dynamic plan here. Or, you know, is it sometime we just take them all, dump them in the garbage, and, you know, that's it. And he says example would be like Bilva Mangal Thakur. You know, he just made that leap like that. So that leap is recommended, but one should know where one is going. See, Bilva Mangal, it was very clearly pointed out. Because it's like this, prostitutes are extremely smart. Because when it comes to the whole emotional, the interaction between male and female, they know what it is exactly. Because they know what affection is and they know what sense gratification is. Right? They can very clearly see the two. Most people can't. But they can see very clearly. So in that way, they're very, very smart. So she points out exactly where he is on the material platform and points out exactly where he should be on the spiritual platform. And realize he didn't go, no, I'm not attached, I just can't, I thought maybe you would be lonely, you know, it's a big storm tonight, maybe you're feeling, you know, scared, you know, so I just wanted to, you know, swim across this river and, you know, climb in your window and all that, just, you know, I was really worried about you, you know, it's like that, yeah, you know, like that, you know, it's like, don't give me that nonsense, you know. You know what I'm saying? So he just said, yeah, that is where I'm at. And he took that leap of faith.
So the thing is how do we know when we should take a leap of faith and when we should just cool it?
When the leap is bigger than the cool it. You know what I'm saying? It's proportion. Just like you get a sinful reaction, you get a good birth when prominently your activities are good. There'll be some bad, because it's never all good. And you get a bad situation or bad birth when the activities are predominantly bad, very little good. You know, it's just like you're predominantly bad, you should take birth as a dog, but you have some pious activity, therefore you're a dog on the heavenly planets. You know, or a dog on the, you know, upper west side in the 87th penthouse, you know, suite, you know, whatever it is, you know, eating filet mignon, something like that, you know, so it's like, you know, it's still your dog. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is when you see the prominent is the one is there and you feel that'll work because you actually know where you're coming from. You know what I'm saying? It's just the leap is good. Means in any case, just to, you know, clarify anything, any devotee that in the past has made that leap, tried for it, didn't make it, doesn't matter. They're special because they did it. Because spiritual's never lost. We're just making this point on if you want to sustain it, then this is the method. But just that they made it made them special. Because not everybody. Everyone's done something, otherwise you wouldn't be sitting here. Right? But still, to even take within Krishna consciousness to take that, that's special. So anyone who's done that, we should never speak badly about. You know? Does that make sense? Because they did it. That was Prabhupada's point. First do what they do, then you can criticize. So you can say, oh, they were GBC, this, that, and now they're just, you know, selling real estate. But have we ever done what they did before they were selling real estate? And if not, come up to that level, then we can talk about their real estate. Does that make sense? So that leap is important, but what we're saying now is because it's not such an emergency as it was in the 70s, is that we can very nicely look at, okay, I'm here, and I could make this leap and it would work. Or, that's what I want to do, but I need a little bit more time. But that has to be adjusted with the point of, you know, there's such a thing called death. You know? So we shouldn't be too relaxed. That's why this whole, what we're talking about today requires maturity. That maturely we look at and can acknowledge our weaknesses and faults and these attachments without getting distracted, either becoming, oh, I'm so useless, and then becoming, you know, the mode of ignorance where then we become inactive, because the whole process is to get the mind active. Or we rationalize and we become proud, which is also a mode of ignorance. Pride is ignorance, inaction is ignorance. Right? The two sides of the same thing. Right? I'm proud, or I don't lack confidence. The same thing, just in inverse, reverse. The actual principle is, this is what I am, and I can live with that. And what needs to be changed, I'm working on it. You know? So then that's dynamic. That works. So with that maturity, then we can see, and the real thing is only Krishna, love for Krishna, Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, his, that's it. There's nothing else. Everything else is simply a medium. The whole Vedic culture, all these different things is only medium for expressing that. It gives rise to the opportunity. The Vedic culture gives the maximum opportunity to chant the Lord's name, remember the Lord, hear his pastimes like that. You know? So therefore, it's accepted as the best method. But otherwise, it itself is not it. That's Bhishma Dev makes the point when he's on the bed of Vera, just at the very end. He's seeing Krishna, he's meditating on Krishna. He says, now all my varnashram, all my duties, all this, then it's all given to Krishna. It's like the real thing is just Krishna and my relationship and service to him. I may be using as a conditioned soul my particular position in varnashram to serve him, but ultimately, it's that attitude of service and desire to please him. That's the real thing. The other is the medium. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then the leap of faith we want, and we should be endeavoring for that. And to not make it, that's not special. Anybody who has made it, even if they failed, still they're special. Because they did it. You know? Is that okay? Yeah, okay, yes.
So would you say that the gist of what you're trying to say is like this book in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeva, where we're at, and we engage our nature in Krishna's service, our conditioned nature, and then automatically, gradually, the attachment will develop in knowledge. So then where you make progress and you can, make that gradually.
Yeah, that would be it. Could everyone hear? No, he was saying is this verse, Vasudeva Bhagavati, where we engage our conditioned nature in the Lord's service, and then by doing that with time, then we'll get the natural detachment and understanding. But with that, there has to be, means the two have to go together, that we're connecting our conditioned nature to Krishna at the same time as Krishna is the person developing a relationship with him is important. So these two, one takes us out of the material world, the other one takes us into the spiritual world. Right? If you can do the one, that'll take you out and in, right? By always being absorbed in Krishna and dividing that relationship with Krishna, that will take you out of the material world, because then if you have that, you're not in the material world. But the other, just engaging our conditioned nature in Krishna's service, that'll take us out of the material world. Right? Means, in other words, the conditioning itself being engaged is the thorn taking out the thorn. The devotion in which it was performed, that's what gets us into the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense?
I understand.
Yeah, like that. So therefore, if it's not a matter of big or small, it's a matter of completeness. Someone is a big, big manager, so therefore he should do big, big management for Krishna. Someone's a small manager, just small managing for Krishna. Someone can't manage, and they're told what to do for Krishna. So it doesn't matter what's happening. The main point is that the Krishna is saying the Gita that the consummation is complete, right? It's once completely absorbed, the body, mind, and words is completely absorbed. That's what we're looking for. So whatever does that, that's what we want. So those activities spiritually that do that, we should encourage that. Either they're working for us, I just should spend more focus on them, or nothing works for me, but the Shastra says this works, so I should do that. You know, either by taste or by knowledge. And the other is that what activities I absorb myself that I can engage in Krishna's service, then I should cultivate those. Is that okay?
You said que everything you make must be connected with Krishna, no? And my case, for example, is in Saturday I cook every Saturday for Radha Madhava. Only this day I make some soup, no? For me or for my vegetarian. But it's not you, because I know cook only Paramadabada. I cook also for the Guru Kulit, no? I think it's after offer to Paramadabada.
You mean to think after you give it to the devotees? It means that prasad is distributed is okay. Do you all understand? Yeah? No good? So that prasad is, you're cooking for the deities, and by that then the devotees will be pleased, that's fine, that's not a problem. But one should be very careful of that. The thing is that one is looking for the appreciation that you'll get from the devotees for having given it to them. That's where the weakness comes in. But even that's there, still cook it for Krishna and then give it to the devotees in the nicest way. And then don't endeavor for that result. You get it? Nice. You don't get it? Then what to do? It's the material world. You know what I'm saying? So you recognize it's there. If that's the only reason that you're going to cook for Krishna, then better you're cooking for Krishna. You know, if it's a matter of, oh, I'm only doing this because then I'm doing it for the appreciation by the Guru Kulis that, you know, I'm giving in this Mahaprasad. But then if we stop cooking for Krishna, then the mind's not engaged. So this is the point, is the two have to go together. That's what I'm saying, is we have the tendency it's one or the other. Rather than, okay, it's there, it's not right, but I should keep cooking, and I should be endeavoring that I'm cooking for pleasing Krishna. And then this other side, where then giving the prasad and everyone going, oh, thank you, Mataji, hi, bow, like that, that side of it, then I won't be endeavoring for that. But that it's coming, I'm not minding, right? Does that make sense? Like that. But we don't, in other words, we don't stop our service because we have material desire. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. We may be dressing the deity because everyone afterwards will say, oh, they look so nice, you did such a great job. Okay, if that's our only motive and we think that's okay and maintain it, we won't be dressing the deities long. Right? But if that may be that, we don't stop dressing the deities because of this. We try to purify the consciousness. So it may be there, but then the other thing, then after a while, it's just people say it's nice, so then, okay, it confirms I'm doing a good job. But I'm not doing it because of that. But that they're appreciating, then I know, okay, it's going the right direction. You know? Does that make sense? So, like that, these would probably be, I guess you could say, practical examples of what we're talking about, how the material and the spiritual are functioning simultaneously. So we don't stop the one because of the other. So the tendency is, oh, you know, the real reason you're doing it's Maya, so therefore we don't do the spiritual. Or, you know, or the other way around is, you know, oh, you're not really interested in Krishna, only in that, yeah, I should be honest and real and just get into family life. You know what I'm saying? So this is the point where I'm saying is the two function together. Then it works.
Yeah, for example, yesterday they don't go and I give to the people in general and the people are still very happy.
So they, yeah, see? There's more of them.
Yeah,
see?
And yes, they're very happy also because it's like me.
Yeah, yeah. So I see. Yeah, why waste your time with these bozo kids? Ungrateful. Don't appreciate. Like that. Yes.
In the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, do you have a spiritual mind, intelligence, and ego, or is there non-existent? Just
is it void? We sit there in the Omkara. No, yes. Could you hear? The question was, is in the spiritual world, do we have a spiritual mind, intelligence, and senses and all that, or it's nothing, it's just the soul? No, it's the spiritual. In other words, it's technically the same thing. It's just that it becomes covered. So because it's covered, then what's covered becomes spiritualized until it removes that covering. And then we're dealing, because the soul by nature, it's, if there's ananda, there must be interaction, relationship. And the relationship is experienced in the mind, so there must be a mind to experience it. right? There's activities. Chit means activities. So there must be knowledge to perform the activities. There must be senses. So they're just all, they're all non-different. They're all parts of the... Sorry. The, in the Brahma Jyoti, is the mind is spirit, is the mind intelligence spiritual? In the Brahma Jyoti is only Sat. So there is no intelligence, there is no mind. There's just the sense of existence. That's what it is. But the souls, because they're Chidananda also, they are only playing a game of being in the Brahman. They're just sitting there and going, yes, I am Brahman. You know, just like the, you know, little kids are sitting there and going, yes, I'm the king, I'm the this, I'm the that. You know, it's like, it's the same thing. So they're sitting there and thinking, I am Brahman. But they're not actually understanding what kind of Brahman they are. So they can only stay in time. So that's the problem. They're thinking, I am Brahman. Who's thinking I am Brahman? That's the mind is doing that. Right? The ego is, I am there. That thought process is going on, the intelligence is being used. So it's all there. So that's why they can't stay there, because they don't have spiritual activities for the mind and senses. So in the same way as this, they fall back. Vishwamitra in samadhi is technically, he's liberated, but he falls back. The criminal's let out of jail, he's liberated, but he falls back into his past. That's the problem, is the past. So we can only counterbalance the past by engaging the past at the same time as the real main thing is the future, is Krishna. And the wonderful thing about Krishna is when you deal with Krishna, Krishna is now. So you're trying to bring your past to now and bring the future to now. And the only place you can do that is Krishna. Like that? Because Krishna is always present. That's why in the spiritual world there is no future or past. It's always present. You know, there's the concept for Leela, but if you think of Krishna in the past, yesterday I did this with Krishna, thinking of Krishna, he's absolute, so he's present. Or in the future I will meet Krishna, you think of Krishna, then is it the present. So experience is always at the present. That's why there's no future or past. But here you think of the past, it doesn't bring it back, it doesn't bring, it's just lamentation for what's gone. And future is only hankering. But in the spiritual, you don't have that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm going to give you a personal example to get some insight on
that. Okay.
From what you were saying, I have been given the opportunity to do some service. And part of that time of that service, I had previously been cooking for my family. And so in exchange for the service, our family is provided for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, how do I not see that as just a material exchange or a material activity exchange for that?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Help me with the proper way to see it and to
express it. Uh-huh. Okay. Means it's natural that any activity should give a result, you know, and there should be something, a positive experience should be attained by an endeavor. That's the natural, how you say, feminine mood. And here we're talking, feminine is not exclusive to, you know, the embodied women. We're talking here the soul, because only Krishna is male. So being result-oriented, which is supposedly some new modern thing, that's the way every woman's been since time immemorial. You know, and the occasional man that's got attached enough to him and wants to, you know, impress them has taken on the same thing and therefore works hard. So that there will be a basis of, okay, I'm doing the service, but this has to be done and that's replaced, then that would be a natural position. Does that make sense? So that it's there, it's not strange. But at the same time, we should focus more that this is an opportunity to serve Krishna, And the devotees are so kind that they will take care and reciprocate. So therefore you see it more as the relationship rather than business. Because business is, I do this, I get that. Rather than I'm performing service and the devotees are so kind, therefore they're extending some protection. Right? That's the difference between protection and the business. This would be similarly misunderstood as women are protected. That means that men provide all the facility for them and see that the situations that they're put into aren't disruptive. Right? In other words, women can't handle certain situations, so the men see that they're not put into those situations. That's protecting. So that their environment is always as stable as possible. Like that. That's protection. Like that. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, it's based on relationship. So then you switch it into relationship. Is that okay? Then it'll work. Okay, thank you. Anything else? Yes. Where's the balance?
Yeah, where's the balance?
Okay. You hear? You all hear? Catch it? No. He's saying is that sometimes we see as a neophyte, I'm just doing this for Krishna. I don't need any reciprocation, people telling me it's great and fabulous, pats on the back, but at the same time as I don't really care about anybody else. So this is in our seed verse on etiquette and culture. Is the third verse of the Shikshastika. So then the point comes is Amanina Man Adena. I'm not looking for respect, but I'm offering it to others. That's the balance. I think we discussed this, two classes before. Is that the platform of Gyan, generally those intellectuals tend towards this platform, is that they understand that it's worthless, all this material fame and position and all that. But then they think everybody else's endeavor for it also is pretty is stupid. So they're intolerant, right? So therefore, then tolerance is there. One must be more tolerant than a tree. And one is not proud that I don't need it. Why does everybody else? So then one's humble. So one's humble and proud and tolerant, then one can respect everyone else and not expect for yourself. So is that okay? Because that's the whole thing is appreciating what others do for us. You know, we have a debt to the living entities. When someone is born, you have a debt like that. And that debt, as long as you're not married and not engaged in any kind of like personal economic development, then there's no problem. But as soon as you do, then these debts fall square in your lap. Right? You have a debt to the demigods because, you know, they open and close your eyes and do everything for you, digest your food, and, you know, they do all this for you, create everything for you. You have a debt to the sages because they give you the process to, you know, be a householder. You know, what works, what doesn't work, what is all the things, the shastra, and the process to get out. We have a debt to the forefathers because it's because we have a father, then we have a body. And he has a body because his father had one, and his, you know, like this. So you owe a debt to the forefathers. You owe a debt to to mankind because we live in a society. And because of them, then you have a prestigious family only because everybody else accepts them as prestigious. You only have money because everybody accepts the concept of economics. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, you only look good because somebody is manufacturing the clothes and the shoes. If they didn't manufacture, then you wouldn't be wearing your, you know, Versace stuff. You know? Is that what he says? So, and to the ghosts, because they also do all kinds of... The Buddhas means all living entities. Other than the human society, everything else. The animals, this, that. We owe a debt to them. You know, our potatoes are growing because the worms are out there doing their thing. The bugs are doing their thing. And, you know, the sun, you know, they're all taking part. Does that make sense? So these five. And a grihastha has to pay these. They don't pay these, they go to hell. 101% guaranteed. Right? So, by taking up Krishna consciousness and worshipping Krishna, all those debts are paid because he is the source of the demigods. He is the original forefather. He is the original. He gives the shastra. All varieties of life come from him. Like that, he is the cause of the society, right? Because the manus are there. Prajapatis are where your forefathers come from. The manus is where human society comes from. All the species of life come from him. That's the Buddhas. The shastra comes from him. And the devas that control all this. You know, so if you worship him, it's taken care of. But in doing this, it doesn't mean that we're not aware and respect and appreciate what all the living entities are doing for us, because they're all Krishnas. So therefore, the devotees, what we're gaining from them, what they're doing for us, it's important. Even though not doing a great job, at least it's there. The temple is there. The temple president's doing a lousy job. But the temple is there, it's open, we can go there, we can take darshan. The worship's going, it's happening. You know what I'm saying? So like that, we could say that about anybody, anywhere, but it's there. Maybe they could do a better job, but still, that much is there. Have we appreciated that much? You know? So that's the thing, is to appreciate the devotees, what we're gaining from the society of devotees, what we're gaining from Krishna, what Krishna is doing for us, right? It means if you told your mother, hey, Ma, you know, I was thinking about it, and, you know, the pigs really got it made, you know, like that, and I want to take birth as a body of a pig, you know, so are you coming with me? What are you going to say? Yes, or you're on your own? Right? Okay. But Krishna, he's in the heart of the pig, so he's willing to go with you. What if you say, okay, take the pig, maybe pig's okay. What about worm and stool? Krishna's there. What about an Ebola, you know, virus? You know, Krishna's there. So whatever the living entity wants to do and be, Krishna's there with them. Now, that you'd have to admit is affection. Because even your mother won't go that far. Right? And mother's taken as the top in the material platform. You know, so love has its limits there, but Krishna, there is no limits. You know, you want to be the big guy, Krishna arranges the material energy so you can be the big guy. You know, the kids want to play, so the father builds a playhouse they can play in. They need toys, he gives them the toys. They don't think, when the kids are out in the house playing with the toys, they don't think, oh, my father's so nice, he gave me all this. They're just playing with the toys. Like that. You know, when they hit about 30, then they start to figure out, hey, the old man did some nice things. They don't know this. Sometimes they do. Those that do, those are special. Those people, and they're the ones that get ahead way early in life. The ones can appreciate what others are doing for them. They're the ones that actually are ahead in life, and people like them for it. Not the, you know, guy that clawed his way to the top. Yeah. Is that okay? Is that answer? Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if the super soul, does it stay with the soul, like it transmigrates from body to body? Because I heard that the super soul leaves the spirit soul during the transmigration process and then comes back when the soul takes the body.
But how would it leave if the subtle body is still there?
So as long as there's a subtle body.
Yeah, chitta means what? Chitta is the polluted consciousness. In the chitta, then you have the life airs, you have the mind, the intelligence, the ego, all those things. So the Lord goes with you. When he leaves is when you leave the material world.
So even if you go to hell, the
Lord's there with you, yeah. Because, you know, you have to be able to properly experience being in hell, you know, otherwise. You know. like that. The only difference in hell is that you're only there in the subtle body, but they cover the subtle body with some special, very tough elements. It's also subtle, but it's tough, so it can handle, you know, being thrown off a mountain, you know, 20 million times, or, you know, boiled in oil, or, you know, these kind of things. Yeah.
So one more question is, how do you distinguish between, like, guilty conscience and the voice of the super soul? Or are they the same?
The best thing is just look at it. It's the intelligence. Because the intelligence is the closest thing to the super soul. That way you don't get into the thing that, you know, God said this or that, you know. It's intelligence, and Krishna speaks to us through the intelligence. Like that. You know, when you see him, then, you know. then you don't have to worry. Then you can say. It's like, I think there was some discussion, Prabhupada, something. I forget what it was. Yeah, there was that. Yeah, two of them. Yeah, one of them said, you know, something about the super soul, and he can see him, and says, you know, what is he doing? Probably look for the, you know, I think he said he was sitting, or, you know, something like that. And that another time was, is they were, I forget who it was, maybe it was Rameshwar or someone else, they were explaining to somebody about how the spiritual master and Krishna's, you know, this, and they threw the intelligence, this and that. Prabhupada was saying, no. Shastra Chakshus, yeah, and Prabhupada's going on this. Prabhupada's trying to make the point that, you know, God tells me what to do. And the other one is trying to say, you know, the Lord is getting more into a mystic thing, this, that. And so at the end, Prabhupada just had to cut him off and said, listen. You know? So when you're at that platform, then. But before that, then generally it's the intelligence. Because the intelligence is so many things. Because all, remember, memory is in the intelligence, it's part of intelligence, one of the five branches of intelligence. So that you walked up to some situation and all that, and you know, you're hearing, oh, you should do this or that, then the intelligence is just coming up with these things because it's done that before. It's relating either to what it's heard or experienced. Like that. And that may be guided by the super soul. You know what I'm saying? But you have to be a little careful there. Like that. Is that okay? Because also the mind does talk. So what talks is not just the intelligence. Mind talks, intelligence talks. That's how you have a whole conversation, an argument. You know? How do you have that? Because it's the two of them, you know, harassing each other.
So to the extent that the intelligence is spiritualized, extent, we can take what the intelligence is saying as guidance.
Yeah. So in other words, intelligence and mind based on scripture, then that's what we want. Ultimately, what we're trying to do is get the mind connected to Krishna based on scripture, based on that. Because it's actually the mind. The intelligence is what we control the mind with. Right. Yeah, okay. Withdraw from the sense activities. By intelligence, the senses will be controlled. So intelligence, we know it's not good. So if the mind has already accepted the principle, I'm trying for spiritual life, it will accept. Does that make sense? Even though it doesn't really want, but it'll accept. But we're trying to get it to the point where the mind actually does accept. This is what it would prefer to do. So, therefore, that's why it has to be, it's Buddhi Yoga, it's based on intelligence. Because we've already accepted the concept that the spiritual and this will be good. So we make that endeavor, even though it's not heartfelt, but the overall concept is there. So the individual detail, I've accepted spiritual life, I may like going to the morning program or not, or chanting or not, or working with others or not, or this or that, but I do it because intellectually I know it's part of the process. But when we like chanting, we like the program, we like the devotees, we like the hearing the scriptures, then that's what we're trying to get to. Because then that's the point. We're trying to transfer the mind from liking material to liking spiritual. And the key to that's the intelligence. Right? Because activity performed with knowledge creates liberation. Right? That's the naishkarmya. That's why you have to have knowledge. Does that make sense?
You tell Krishna, give us everything, give us the life also, no? Because the mother and the father, they are not important, no? Because
are the mother and father important? Because Krishna is the one giving us the life. It means ultimately, then no, but then that means the life itself is not important because the soul is always alive. But we say giving life, our parents gave us life, that means they gave us a body. So as long as we consider the body important, then the mother and father are important. Right? Yeah. No, because then nothing's material. Like that. But as long as to that degree the body's important, it's there. But as far as etiquette, then one is always to behave properly with the mother and father and the teacher. These three always have to be respected. Like that. Your son's not important. But you have to explain, I don't understand what you don't understand. No, but I'm saying until I know what you don't understand, I don't know what to tell you to try to remove the misunderstanding, because I don't understand what you don't understand. You know what I'm saying? Which point you don't understand?
You tell the father and mother give you the body only.
Yeah.
Because the soul is life before and after. Entonces, we are not nothing. Not the mother, not the father, not the son. We are not nothing. No?
We are not nothing, we are nothing? No, but who's nothing? The soul or the body? It is nothing, but the point is as long as we are conditioned, it means something to us. So as long as we're conditioned, then mother and father have a meaning. Because ultimately, the same soul that's the mother this life, generally speaking, the general principle is who's the women this life or the men last life, and the men this life or the women last the previous life. Because at the time of death, you go to where your shelter is. So the men think of the women think of the men. So then they just keep switching. Okay, so last life they were the man, this time they're the woman, or vice versa. So how is it that they would know how to be the mother or the father? Why would they do everything? You know, these things just come. I mean, it's like, where does those emotions come from? They just come. You don't plan them. Right? You can plan to make the situation in which you can experience them, but the experience yourself, you are not in control of. Right? All kinds of things start churning in the third or fourth chakras like that. All these emotions, you're creating those things? No, they're happening by the modes. So in other words, the real concept, the potency of mother or father or child is coming from Krishna. He empowers the body to have that. Otherwise, it wouldn't act in that way. Does that make sense? So, from that platform, ultimately, it's Krishna. Because Krishna is the mother, Krishna is the father. What's it? Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadana, right? So, ultimately, it's Him. Whatever it is that we're looking for in that is Krishna. That attachment, that affection, that interact is Krishna that we're looking for. But because we're not recognized as Krishna, Krishna then puts His potency into these positions so that we can interact with Him. But it's indirect because we don't recognize Him. Does that make sense? Yeah, but I'm saying, so as long as you're thinking it's son, then that long, it's important. Right? Does that make sense? So as long as that's there, then that's your is important. Because the actual, the only real thing is Krishna. Because this soul happens to be your son this life, so that, you know, a few things. One is so that they can be brought up in a Krishna conscious environment, so they can continue where they left off from last life in their Krishna consciousness, right? If they're born in a devotee family, they were devotee, practicing devotees before. You know, no one with Agyata Sukriti is born in a devotee family. Agyata Sukriti, you're born in aristocracy or religious families. You're not, devotee family means you've practiced devotional service. You know, it's come to the point of consciously it's devotional service. Like that. So that's there. And for you to engage the feelings of parenthood in a Krishna conscious way, that you, all the emotions, the interactions, and the care and the protection and all those things, then are engaged in Krishna service by making them into devotees. Right? And they're born again because they still have those kind of needs. If they didn't have those needs, then like Sukadeva Goswami, they would have been out the door. Right? And not out the door, you know, selling cocaine or out with a girlfriend. It means they'd be out the door in a, you know, you know, some kind of religious situation in which they're not involved in any way in family activities, right? Does that make sense? So like that. So therefore, then they're also in that family, and what you would offer is what generally is what they're interested in, either in the positive or the negative. Either they are thinking of it because that's what they want, or they're thinking of it because that's what they hate. One or the other. But it's the aversion, or it's one aspect of attachment.
Also, maybe what Mahamudra's practice is, like for example, if someone discusses a spiritual environment and create a strong spiritual environment, where the son is going to go if he becomes completely spiritual, he's completely satisfied in a spiritual environment. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is living at home with his father. Or Srila Prabhupada is keeping his father until the end. He's not making even take one of Prabhupada's sannyas. He keeps him until the end. Because the environment with his Vaishnava is perfect environment. So it's not necessary that the son is pushing away the parents the moment he becomes spiritual. If the parents are Vaishnavas, he can't.
Oh, so that's the real question. Okay, so the actual question is this. If my son becomes Krishna conscious, is he going to forget about me? Yeah. If he's cultured, no. Right? Because the point is he, you know, he is conditioned. He has to come in the material world. He has to have some form. You've made that form, yes. Like that. I forgot about that basic. Someone pointed that out to me the other day. Is that sometimes mothers, fathers don't want their kids to become too spiritual because they're afraid they're going to lose the relationship. Like that. So I think it was just about 2 weeks ago someone pointed that out to me. You know, because otherwise it's always, I should be spiritual, always this, that, this. And when they become too spiritual and they're not interacting, it's kind of like, hey, wait a minute. You know, what about your family? What about your family? That is, hey, wait a minute, but you said spiritual. He says, yeah, but I mean, you know, spiritual is, you know, like that. So, no, that's why in the Vedic culture, then there's no need. Right? Even though Lord Chaitanya is taking sannyas, where he went is according to his mother's direction. Right? That he would go to Puri. And so she can always regularly get news and hear things and send things to him like that. So then, like that. So that was there. So the relationship is never, never mother, father, and teacher, these three are never to be the relationship is never dropped like that. It may not have the same mundane feeling, but the interaction will be there. See, that's the thing, is that on the spiritual platform, there is interaction. Right? Means, in other words, the parents in the spiritual world who have children who are Krishna's cowherd boyfriends are perfectly satisfied in their parental relationship with their children. Right? But that's not their main focus. Their focus is Krishna. Does that make sense? So relationship is there. But it's not that it's lost. You know, Radharani is always going back. You know, I think she spends some time in Yavat and some time in Varshana with her family. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So if the relationship's not the duty, but if the actual interaction where it's you can actually imbibe in the children the personal element, then the relationship will never be lost. Does that make sense? But if it's simply that because you're the parent, then therefore they have to, that's duty, and then it will be just duty, and only how much they require for their station, then that's all. Does that make sense? So then a lot goes back onto the parent. Is how they are training, therefore how is the child responding and reciprocating with them? Does that make sense? Is the relationship spiritual? Means the relationship of two devotees assisting each other engage their conditioned nature in Krishna consciousness, that's spiritual. But mother and son, it's engaged, it's spiritualized, but it's not eternal. When you get to the spiritual realm, the relationships may be very different. Right? But that doesn't matter. Point is because we'll be so absorbed in Krishna and the association of the devotees, that particular mundane aspect is not so important. Right? Because ultimately they're going to go away anyway. You know what I'm saying? Either they're going to go, you're going to go, you're both going to go. You know, somebody is going to die first. Right? You know, so then these things happen. So then relationship's gone. That makes sense. So therefore we understand it, the culture is there, the interaction is there, but at the same time as we know that higher aspect is there, because that's eternal. Right? As devotees, you'll always have a relationship. But what exactly will be the rasa of that relationship, that's something different. Right. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, I know from the beginning, I know, right? All the boys, they go to Maya or they go to Krishna, no?
But generally that's the two options you got, Maya or Krishna, yeah? That's
because they all fit like with me, but because I still thinking, no, I prefer to go to Krishna, no? Not to Maya, no? And no, all it's like kind of the same with me, no? But
Yeah.
Just one, you was mentioning modern psychology as a term which of positive thinking, right? When you think you are getting in trouble, you can get in trouble. When you think you can do this and become sick, it's more opportunity to become sick. How this principle is real? Is it something real or it's just imaginary?
Okay. In the psychology of positive thinking, is it real or not?
Your mind already programming you down, so you're going down.
See, the point is that Gita mentions it, is from the mind comes then your body. And the body is there to put you in certain situations. But the positive thinking, if it's an illusion, then that's not there. The point is it's real. Okay, maybe I'm poor, But that doesn't mean that one can't make an endeavor and get somewhere. Or maybe we're poor, but what's wrong with being poor? It's being poor, rich is relative. You know, if you're a billionaire having $1 million, they shoot themselves. There was one lady, she killed herself because she didn't want to break her lax $1 million fixed deposit to feed herself. Yeah, so she thought she was, you know, on the dregs because she was down to the last $1 million fixed deposit, right? Someone else who had a $1 million fixed deposit, they'd be in ecstasy. They think, I'm stinking rich. So being rich is a concept. It's not an actuality. You know, someone who's satisfied with what they have is rich, and someone who's dissatisfied are poor. Right? You can be sitting under a tree, but the world's yours. And the other guy's, you know, the big, big billionaire, but still he's poor. So the whole thing of the positive is means it's a matter of actual knowledge, of understanding the soul, being satisfied that we are soul servant of God, and satisfied that this is our conditioned nature, this is what we got to work with this lifetime. Oh, I wish I was this, I wish I was that. Well, why bother? This is what you got. Do what you can with it. So, in other words, it's not positive thinking, it's realistic thinking. It's just a matter of different terms. Other ones call it being real or being honest. It's the same thing. They're only talking one point. Just that they're coming in, they're understanding, they're coming from different angles. But it's just being naturally comfortable with ourself as a soul, as a servant of Krishna, who happens to be in the material world's condition. And then the process, you know, this is not our place, spiritual world is our place, how to get out of here. You understand that realistically, then you've already gained what all these other books are going to tell you. It's like this. Did you expect, means it's like this. It's just a matter of percentages. Right? People make money off of this. There's a certain amount of percentages that you do any activity, it'll work, and a certain percentage you do it, it won't work. It's some far out percentage thing, something like 60% or something. And so, if you're thinking it's going to be wrong, if it goes wrong, then you'll think, oh, it was because I was thinking like that. But if it went right, then, you know what I'm saying? By thinking, in other words, if you are performing the activity using your intelligence to your best without expecting a result, that's where you'll get the best result. If you're wanting the result, you may also get a bad result because you need to be corrected. You're doing the activity simply for a result. You think, hey, you know, I go home, I'm going to do this, I'm going to say this, and then everyone's going to smile and I'm going to get all the attention and all that. Then you walk in, go through the thing, and, you know, first of all, you walk in and find out that they're in the shower. You know, and then, okay, that didn't work. Okay, but when they get out of the shower and all that, and then it's, oh, hey, can you, you know, put this and do this and call up this person? Okay, when they get that. And then you get out, and then it's, oh, yeah, you know, this one's coming over, you know. Okay, so much for my plan, right? So, therefore, even though it's positive, but the point is determination. It doesn't work. You continue at it. Continue. But stubborn means you continue despite all obstacles, trying to do it in the same way. Determined means the obstacles, you try to make adjustment to get the result. But the result is not yours. That's the difference between stubborn and determined. Is that okay? Okay. Is something? Someone over here somewhere? No, yes.
How to deal with relations when they create an obstacle in a cultural way?
How? How does one relate to the family that creates obstacles? Depends upon what's your position. If you're in a position of independence, then whatever they've given you to get you to that point of independence, you appreciate. And you continue following the proper, etiquette and culture. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. But then if it's not favorable, then you can choose another situation. If you're dependent, then you have to play the game so that you can still do your devotional service. Okay? Anything else? Or what time is it? Oh, it's 10. Okay, so then we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jayanatai Gaura Premananda.